In the seminary, there was a figure who was always pointed out as being heroic. It was a little French monk from the 6th century named Vincent of Lorraine. And he said, the faith, he described it this way, fides id quod creditur semper ubique et ab omnibus. That is, faith is what people believed always, everybody, and all the time. So faith was this nice fixed point, and you're just kind of hung on to it all the time. And that, of course, was pretty generally the view of things through the church. And I think that's one of the worst things that happened to us, because it kind of set in concrete what faith was supposed to be, and above all, seemed to ignore the reality of the life of faith. If faith is a life, then it can't be this nice, static, permanent condition that Vincent Lorand talked about and which we promoted with such ardor. So we need to go to the much later theologian, Cardinal Newman, who had this wonderful statement, to live is to change. To live is to change. And to become perfect is to have changed often. What Newman had, and he wrote a lot of this, wrote about this a good deal throughout his life, was about the dynamic character of faith. To believe means necessarily to be able to change, to grow. And all of this came to my mind with this deeply troubling parable about the guy hiring these characters the old day, and going out to hire people in the evening and paying them the same as everybody else. That doesn't make any sense. It really offends my sense of justice. But then, whoever picked these readings did it very cleverly, I think, when they juxtaposed that with this passage from Isaiah, which says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways. What I'd like to propose is this, that when I was a little kid, and maybe this happened to you too, I went to parochial school, and the nun said, God is this, and God is this, and God is this, and gave us all kinds of answers to questions that he never had. It was all sort of useless, I thought. I mean, later on, it became very clear to me. It was not, as they say, age appropriate. It was not anything that would be useful for somebody who's taking their first baby steps in the life of faith. In fact, I think for a lot of people, it made faith impossible because of that very implausibility, I think. Giving people information, supposedly secure, sound, permanent information, that they couldn't do anything with. What is going on in this reading, I think, is a description of, I think, pardon me, a mature faith. What does that include? There's another theologian from the 15th century, a guy named Nicholas of Cusa, who wrote a very famous book called De Docta Ignorantia, concerning learned ignorance. And he came up with that notion, it was not original, as we'll see in a couple of minutes, that to grow, to live the life of faith, is precisely to come to know how little you do know about God. In other words, it's not that God recedes into some kind of invisible horizon, but rather it causes much more modesty in our sense of how we know God and what God is for us and what God, above all, is supposed to do for us. It does not remove God from the scene, but restores God's freedom and God's grandeur to God. Because my tendency is always to miniaturize God, to make God manageable, you know, to reduce him or her to my present needs, to my present understanding, and therefore to basically worship my ideas about God. And if this is shown by Isaiah or by Jesus that, listen, what you're expecting, you're living off what you expect rather than the reality, which is God. So the question becomes then, well, what do you do? We just have this impossible quandary where we're stuck. No. It sends us back, I think, precisely to what Newman said. To believe is to grow deeper and deeper and deeper in the understanding of oneself, because faith is always a matter of self-understanding as well. So one's self-understanding changes as one's understanding of God changes. The human beings have this seemingly inextinguishable penchant for certainty. I want to know where everything is. I want to know what I'm supposed to do. I want everything nailed down. And of course, in consequence of that, we're continually being upended. Surprise. Some of the surprises are nice, some of them not so nice. Huh? But that argues to a narrowness, I think, at least it does in my case, to my understanding of God, to becoming aware that my understanding that God is always greater than my understanding of God. And this is the pivotal thing, and that's the only real God. God has to be larger than I am, or what is God worth? So again, I think this plays out in all kinds of ways, that the stuff in my life, for example, and I don't think I'm unique in this, the last stuff I would have hoped to happen, happened. But if some of that seemingly catastrophic stuff had not happened, I would never have grown. I would never have come to understand more deeply. I don't know who God is, but that does not mean detaching myself from God. It just makes me more ardent in seeking God, more committed to that part of human life, which is at the heart of being religious, which is the life of prayer. To come to really believe that God's ways are not my ways, that God does this, all this weird stuff like paying these guys the same thing, you know, has to move me to prayer. Has to move me to prayer. And only that is going to help me to come to a deeper understanding of who God is. But again, that final clarification, prayer has to arise out of life as well. It always struck me, teaching at King's when I started there, that all kinds of kids came into, and they were considerably more pious and observant Christians, that all kinds of kids came into the class and with about a grade 3 understanding of religion. They had all this stuff nailed down, they knew the catechism, blah, 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 blah. And they hadn't moved beyond that because the spirit of Vincent Lorrain haunted the life of their teachers and the kind of pedagogy that went on. I don't know whether we're far advanced from that kind of static, dead sort of understanding of God, or whether we are becoming more adventurous, more earnest in really seeking the face of God today with the students. But it says all kinds of things about how I understand myself, how I deal with them, and how I understand the church as well, you know, and the world. If the church is not constantly in conversation with the world, with the lived experience of people, then we go no place. We don't come to understand more. We don't come to be more faithful to God. And most importantly, we don't know how to love properly. Because that's what it's all about. To be able to grow in love, which means to be able to live in darkness, much more profound and pervasive. And I would like to think it was. See, I'd like to think love is this nice, neat thing. Here's this person, I love them, they love me. So this is what we have to do. Doesn't work that way, as we all know. It doesn't work that way. This openness to the future, which is... So all this stuff fits together. The one thing in the seminary which we did very little about was hope. Hope, the forgotten virtue. If we had it all nailed down all the time. Hope is precisely to be open to a future that I do not know, certainly that I do not control, but toward which I project myself in belief that God is God and will sustain me.